I didn't quit because I was weak. I quit because the place made my talent feel dangerous. That sentence took me years to say without apologizing for it. At the time, I didn't frame it that way. I told people I was tired. I said it was time for a change. I said I wanted something different. All true and all incomplete. The truth is, I loved my job long after it stopped loving me back. I loved the work. I loved the pressure. I loved being good at something that mattered. What I didn't love was the way competence became a liability once it disrupted someone else's comfort. At first, nothing was openly hostile. It never is. It was subtle shifts. Meetings that went quiet when I spoke. Praise that came with conditions. Responsibility without authority. Visibility without protection. I didn't plan to leave. I planned to endure. To outwork the discomfort. To outlast it. But sometimes endurance just teaches the system how much it can take from you before you bleed out. And sometimes leaving is the only way to stop the bleeding. When I joined the company, it felt like a win I had earned the hard way. A respected firm, German leadership culture, precision, discipline, hierarchy. I understood those rules instinctively. I liked clarity. I liked standards. I liked knowing where power lived, even if I wasn't the one holding it yet. My role sat in the uncomfortable middle layer, senior enough to be accountable, junior enough to be expendable. I was hired for my expertise, not my personality. That mattered to me. I wanted to be measured by results, not charm. For the first year, I was exactly what they said they wanted. I fixed processes that had been quietly failing for years. I asked questions that others avoided. I noticed patterns leadership preferred to label as isolated incidents. My numbers were strong. My teams trusted me. My name started showing up in rooms I wasn't in. That's usually when the temperature changes. It didn't happen all at once. It started with small recalibrations. Feedback that contradicted itself. Compliments that ended with warnings. I was told I was impressive, but intense. Reliable, but not flexible. Trusted, but maybe too visible. No one said I was wrong. They just started saying I was complicated. Leadership meetings became quieter when I spoke. Not argumentative quiet. Polite quiet. The kind that suggests you've disrupted a narrative they were comfortable with. Decisions I'd helped shape were later announced without my name attached. Projects I had built were reassigned for balance. At first, I assumed it was normal politics. I didn't take it personally. I'd worked long enough to know that organizations protect their hierarchies even while pretending to value innovation. I told myself this was the cost of impact. What I didn't expect was how quickly competence could be reframed as threat. I noticed it most in how my mistakes were handled versus others. When I misjudged a timeline, it became a discussion about leadership readiness. When someone else did, it was framed as resource constraints. When I pushed back, I was labeled emotional. When they pushed back, it was strategic. No one raised their voice. No one insulted me outright. Everything stayed professional. That's what made it dangerous. There was no single incident to point to, just accumulation. I started editing myself in meetings, shortening sentences, softening conclusions, offering disclaimers before opinions. I hated myself a little every time I did it, but I told myself it was tactical. I believed if I adapted enough, the friction would resolve. Instead, the expectations shifted again. I was asked to take on more responsibility without additional authority, to mentor peers who had decision power over my work, to absorb risk while others collected stability. It was presented as trust. It felt like exposure. Still, I stayed. Because leaving felt like failure. And because I didn't yet understand that staying was costing me something quieter and more permanent than a job, the moment I knew something had changed for good was the day my work was used against me. I had raised a concern months earlier about a structural issue that would eventually surface as a compliance problem. I documented it. I escalated it carefully. I proposed solutions. Leadership thanked me and moved on. When the issue finally broke open, suddenly my name was everywhere. Not as the warning voice, but as the one closest to the failure. Context disappeared, timelines blurred, accountability flowed downward with impressive speed. In meetings, my words were repeated back to me with a different tone. What had once been foresight was now framed as anxiety. I watched leadership protect itself in real time, and I realized something essential. I was not part of the inner circle that absorbed damage. I was part of the outer layer designed to take it. After that, the pressure became more direct, performance conversations that focused less on outcomes and more on perception, suggestions that I needed to be less sharp, feedback that encouraged me to step back, to let others lead, to trust the process. The process was already broken. That was the point. I began losing sleep. Not dramatic insomnia, just shallow rest. Waking up tired, replaying conversations in my head, practicing calmer versions of myself that still somehow sounded wrong. At work, I became hypervigilant, measuring tone, reading faces, anticipating objections before they formed. I was performing emotional labor just to exist in the room without consequences. The hardest part was how normal it all looked from the outside. I was still successful, still respected, still employed. Friends told me I was overthinking, that this was just leadership friction, that I should be proud to be seen as strong. Strength, I learned, is often just another word for tolerable damage. I considered leaving quietly. I updated my resume late at night. I scanned job listings during lunch. But every time I got close, something pulled me back. Loyalty, pride, fear. The belief that if I stayed just a little longer, the story would correct itself. Then came the conversation that ended it, even though it wasn't meant to. It was framed as a development check-in. Calm, friendly, concerned. I was told that my future at the company depended on my ability to be less visible in my convictions, less assertive in my expertise, more comfortable letting decisions unfold, even when I knew they were wrong. I remember sitting there, listening, and feeling something detach. They weren't asking me to improve. They were asking me to disappear without leaving. That was the moment I understood the real choice in front of me. I could stay and slowly hollow myself out until I fit their comfort, or I could leave and accept whatever story they would tell about my exit. Neither option was painless, but only one allowed me to keep my integrity intact. I didn't resign that day. I went home and stared at the ceiling. I cried in a way that surprised me with its quietness. No drama. Just grief, for the version of myself that believed excellence would protect her. When I submitted my resignation weeks later, it was polite, appreciative, professional. They thanked me for my contributions. They wished me luck. Relief washed through the system instantly. That told me everything I needed to know. Leaving didn't feel like victory. It felt like stepping out of a building I'd been holding up from the inside and watching it stand just fine without me. That realization hurt more than I expected. The first weeks after my exit were disorienting. My body stayed in alert mode even without the job. I woke up expecting messages that never came. I fiended at emails that had nothing to do with me. My nervous system hadn't caught up to my decision. People asked why I left. I gave them the safe version. New opportunities, alignment, growth. I didn't tell them the truth, because the truth sounded dramatic out loud, and I was already tired of defending my perception. It took time to understand that what I experienced wasn't personal failure. It was structural rejection. The organization didn't know what to do with someone who could see clearly and wouldn't look away. That knowledge came slowly, through distance, through conversations with others who had left similar roles, through recognizing patterns I'd ignored while inside. I realized how often institutions celebrate talent only as long as it remains controllable. How quickly value becomes threat when it challenges existing power. How silence is rewarded not because it's wise, but because it's convenient. I also saw my own complicity. The times I softened truths to survive. The moments I stayed quiet to avoid consequences. The way I learned to bleed slowly instead of refusing the wound. I don't regret leaving. I regret how long it took me to understand that staying was teaching the system how to consume me. My career recovered. It always does when you carry real skill. But the residue remained. I trust differently now. I listen for what isn't said. I pay attention to who is protected when things go wrong. Most importantly, I no longer confuse endurance with strength. Sometimes strength is knowing when your presence is being used to legitimize a structure that harms you. Sometimes power looks like choosing absence. I didn't plan that exit. I wanted to build something lasting there. I wanted my work to speak for itself. But when a place makes your talent feel dangerous, the only honest even well the most rocking things from your talent may seem. I know how we would best in any way that would fall into the city, not loudly, not bitterly, just decisively. And to walk away before the bleeding convinces you that it's normal.